It's December 13th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. We're through with being cool. We're through with being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twits. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Today we have the Week in Geek News, and in the second half we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. We are bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed on Geek Speak do not necessarily reflect the views of KUSP. With me in the air room is Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Go for it.
Good morning, Lyle.
Lyle?
Miles, here I am. I'm trying to get my headset to work.
And Ryder Brooks, Technical Support Manager at Sun Microsystems.
Well, not Technical Support Manager. I'm just a grunt now. But yeah, good morning. It's been a while.
Today we have, of course, the Week in News. Sean, would you like to start off?
Yeah. Unusually well-preserved 2,000-year-old human brain was discovered in Britain this past week. Actually, I think it was discovered earlier than that, but they just came out and started talking about it. A team was excavating at a York University site, and they found a skull containing a yellow substance, which scans showed to be shrunken but brain-shaped. It consists of fatty tissue and microbes in the soil, would absorb. Neurologists believe, that they found some sort of fossilized brain, and they're still doing research, testing on it.
Fossilized brain.
Pretty interesting, though, that something could be preserved.
Yeah, what type of things would they be able to find from this?
I think that's what they're trying to determine. But they have, something they've never seen before. And, they don't know what the head, why it was there, although they believe it may have been a ritual offering.
Yeah, it's too bad Don has already left the room. I would have asked, what would be the thing that you would find out? Like, how much does diet, for example, affect brain chemistry? What types of things would they be looking for?
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to determine whether there's biological material in it and what the composition is, So, I don't know. We'll hopefully learn something from this find.
And next up, Ryder.
I'll talk a little bit about Netflix has announced that they actually have to lay off 50 of their technical support staff that is normally dedicated towards resolving installation and usage issues with their Play Now or their Watch Now feature for their streaming on computers.
Wait, let me get this straight. They're not laying off people because they're having a problem. They're laying off people because they haven't been having a problem.
Yeah, they've adopted Microsoft Silverlight technology, which is somewhat of a competitor to Adobe Flash technology for their online video streaming, and it's apparently extremely efficient and easy to install, and has so few problems that they don't need 50 people to help resolve those problems. So. Unfortunately, in this waning economy, and Microsoft has help axe 50 people
by doing something right.
By doing something right, yeah.
So they just can't win for trying, huh?
on the plus side is that the Silverlight is actually the technology that's allowed Macintosh users to start using the video streaming technology because it uses Microsoft's. Video codecs that allow for the digital rights management, and unlike Flash, which you see like on YouTube all the time, it prevents people from actually saving them to file and downloading them to their disk.
And in fact, there was a recent story about how Linux, TiVo, and DirecTV are all now available for Netflix instant viewing.
Using Silverlight, or
I'm assuming so, because mm-hmm. otherwise it would require a fair amount of extra development.
But. Yeah, I'd been looking into that a little bit. I know that the Xbox 360 is going to have native support for streaming it. PlayStation 3, unfortunately, is not. They've not expressed any interest. I've heard of third parties. I forget the name of the third party, but have a subscription service that will allow you to do it through the PlayStation 3 interface. But it's currently in beta and would cost a little extra. It's not free.
Have you actually tested the download capabilities in Netflix?
Streaming on a Mac? I have, and I don't know if it's my laptop or whatnot, but it was a little choppy for me. It was kind of consuming a lot of CPU on my dual-core system, and I wasn't quite happy with it, but I, you know, it was the first time I'd heard about it. It was like last week. I'm like a month behind.
Were you connected up with a wire, or were you wireless?
No, I was you know, gigabit Ethernet, and
yeah,
it was it seemed like it was a limitation of the Silverlight, but I didn't really.
How's the quality?
The quality was good, but it was banding a bit.
Yeah.
So
I got rid of my Netflix service before the streaming feature.
Banding, just for the audience, what do you mean by banding?
Like it looked like it was not refreshing. You know, it could have been my monitor, but it looked like I was seeing like due to the CPU limitations or something like that, it was not refreshing appropriately on my screen. So
okay.
It looked like it was, you know, offset and like a split on the screen that was moving up. I don't think, you know, it's not the quality of the video itself. It was just something about the streaming presentation and
okay.
refresh rates.
Well, I'll put forth my own little news story here. Google is releasing a native client, which is putting straight program code onto the web. And this has always been a problem in the past because, for example, ActiveX technology from Microsoft used this technique, or used native code anyway, on there. And it was a security nightmare. Google, on the other hand, appears to be taking a different tact on it, that the code is not running directly on the bare metal. It's running in their own sandbox virtual machine. And so it's running within there, and so that's how they're able to cut it off, because one of the issues with native code is that once you have a memory pointer, you can go anywhere. There's no stopping it from going anywhere else in the process. It doesn't matter what your sandbox is like. That was what the ActiveX problem came about. So when you run it in what amounts to a virtual machine, that problem is mitigated, or hopefully so. Now, that along with it, this kind of brings into why we would have the Google browser, which has now come out of beta, that each one is... each page has its own process. It's a multi-process environment. So it makes a lot more sense when you're putting a native code widget on there that you can separate out the processes easily.
Okay, so each application or page is isolated into that native code of that.
Right, yeah. And if one page causes a problem, you close it down, it's closing the process. It's a inter-process communication as opposed to a threaded or intra-process right. communication right. line.
So you're ensuring isolation between your mm-hmm. your pages.
Yeah, you even have okay. Firefox developers going, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, so, and they call that Chrome, right? That's the
right.
the Google browser.
Right.
Have you used it? Do you like it?
I have not as yet because they hadn't released it for Mac.
Yeah, I'm waiting on that too. And it's not on Linux either, unfortunately.
I've been using it, the beta. You know, the one gripe I had was the bookmark manager, or the lack of.
You got spoiled by Firefox?
Yeah, I use Foxmarks. So I can synchronize my bookmarks. And there's even a Foxmarks plugin for Internet Explorer. So I can sync all my... And I have a lot of bookmarks. I can sync them between platforms, and Google doesn't have that support. So I was able to import my bookmarks from Firefox when I installed Chrome. But I just don't like the way you can manage bookmarks like you can in Firefox. Mm. So they added that feature, a bookmark manager and privacy controls, to the full version that's come out of beta. So that was available for the first time to most everybody else yesterday. So I didn't have a chance to test it. I kind of wanted to, but I was so slammed with work this week. Yeah. The new version over and above the beta, this new version offers more speed. So V8 JavaScript engine runs 1.4 times faster based on SunSpider benchmark. You know about that?
No.
Is that part of Sun, or is that just a...
Yeah, see, these benchmarks,
never heard
though,
of it.
There's several... there's SunSpider, there's... or the, SpiderMark.
There's
rather.
A V8 benchmark. Yeah, right. have you used these?
Yeah, I have, and they all show different things. Like, the different JavaScript engines all seem to maximize different areas. For example, the V8 engine, I believe, looks for recursive code and optimizes that more than anything else. Firefox's code, I think, goes more for a general case, and also some graphics aspects I've seen have been very good. And then you have WebKit, which was great for a general purpose as well. But, I mean, one will beat the others on one benchmark and then lose to the others on another benchmark. So
right,
it's a pretty tight race. It's pretty exciting, actually.
So if anybody out there is using it and has anything they want to say about it, please call in, and we'd love to hear from you. We'll be taking calls, I guess, at the half hour.
Yeah,
Mark.
Starting at the half hour mark.
But you can start sending us emails now. Just go to geekspeak.org and click on the contact us button.
Now, Sean, you had some more news stories?
Yeah. So the Sony Home has...
Sorry, Sony Home?
Sony Home has gone out of beta.
I'm sorry, what is Sony Home?
Or the beta, it actually has got open to the public. So Sony launched this, it's called PlayStation Home. It's for the PlayStation 3. It's like Second Life. It's a virtual world where PlayStation 3 owners can actually go in and make an avatar. It's a full-bodied version of yourself. They give you all the tools to customize it. And then you can run around this, it's like a square with a fountain in the middle. It's really big. There's a stage where you can actually walk up and start dancing, and you can make your avatar dance disco or rock or whatever moves you want. You can chat to people through text while you're doing this, and a bubble appears over their head with the message. It's kind of fun to watch, actually. And then there's a chat scroll bar on the bottom left that just kind of shows everyone talking. There's also a headset support, so if you walk close enough to somebody else's avatar and they have a headset and they're talking, you can actually hear them.
Hmm.
So there's a mall.
Virtual eavesdropping.
Yeah. The mall I was not impressed with. It's like 31 megs to download. So over PS3, it took a while. Now, I don't have a PS3. I was over at my friend's house, and he's got a big screen on his wall. So we were all just sitting there playing with it, and it was kind of fun. But when you actually walk into a store, it then becomes like a web interface, and you shop that way. It's not a store where you would actually walk your avatar around aisles and look at things. So I was really let down by that.
Still beta, though, right?
But the arcade is really interesting. It looks like an arcade when you're in there. And you see stand-up arcade games, and you walk up to it. If you want to play a game, then your PlayStation 3 screen becomes that game, and you play the game.
Hmm.
And then when you're done, the camera backs out, and you see your character standing in front of the arcade, and you can walk around and play other games. That was really kind of neat. But otherwise, I think the ratio of girl to guy was like 20 to 1. And, of course, everybody in this world is pretty.
Wait, girl to guy?
The guy to girl ratio.
Okay.
20 to 1. 20 guys to 1 girl. Everyone in this world seems pretty. Nobody was had really ugly avatars. And wherever there was a girl, there was a bunch of guys around the girl.
Oh, there's a ringing endorsement for people to go there.
So some of the things that I saw. That's PlayStation Home.
Great. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
Ryder.
Local Santa Cruz news. There was a rape case where one of the primary interview testimonies of one of the alleged victims had been lost due to a corrupted DVD, and it turned out that the judge believed that her testimony was, or the district attorney was, believed that their testimony differed from her original statement, so they made her testimony inadmissible. So it was really important that they get this DVD data available.
So they recorded her interview on a video camera, then saved that video onto a DVD?
I'm not sure if it was specifically a DVD recording video camera or they converted it. I'm assuming...
But the data was stored on the DVD.
The data was stored on the DVD, and when they went to play it, it was basically unreadable. And they had...
How old was this DVD?
I want to think it's a couple years old.
Yeah, I think it was saying it was 22 years old.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which is a shame for data storage. Like, how many things have we recorded and they're not going to be getting good? Like, how good is that media going to work?
Yeah, DVD media has at least a 12-year lifespan. I think there were topics of, like, molds that can grow on your DVD media.
Yeah, obviously not in this case, though.
Yeah, no, in this case, it was only 2 years, but there was... a lot of, there's commentaries on some of the articles I've seen on it as to what caused it to corrupt, whether the session wasn't closed, something simple like that. But they had taken, the court had taken it, the data to two local data recovery centers that basically deemed it unrecoverable. And then somebody was a retired Seagate employee, had recommended that they take it to Seagate. They have their own data recovery service, and they were able to restore it, even though DVD media is not their specialty. You know, their hard
right,
drive.
But I guess that makes sense. They have all these hard drives and trying to figure out how best to get data off of it.
Yeah.
They know how the physics works.
Yeah.
I guess
so,
the best way
and I guess if, you know, if you're a really good, it's called Seagate Recovery Services is the company within Seagate subsidiary. They were able to get the data, and they were able to use the data, the interview that was basically recorded. They were able to recover the whole thing. So
that's wonderful.
OnePlus for
there's a local recovery company though in town you were talking about.
Yeah, I actually have a friend that I used to work with at SCO that is I believe he's a co-founder or he's a principal employee of RediskMe, which is a local data recovery center. And we're hoping to have him on the show soon. So we can ask him all about it and see if he knows much about, you know, the distinctions between, you know, DVD recovery and hard drives.
But we should definitely have them on, especially if they're local.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ryder, for that story. Sure. Sean, do you have another story?
I do. And this one, for me, is just really frustrating. DRM on games, digital rights management. So copy protection, everyone else calls it. You know, I was installing Crisis Warhead yesterday on a test machine. So I get all my games, you know, through NVIDIA, through work. And so I really can't complain. I didn't spend money on this. But, you know, I'm using it for benchmarking different systems and graphics cards and whatnot. And it told me I had installed it on too many systems and locked me out. And I had only installed it on, I think it's my third or fourth system.
How many should you have been able to install?
Well, you know, that's the question, right? If they're going to have some sort of an online check, you know, there should be a way to disable a system. Like, I should be able to say, install it on a system, play the game, and then have the ability to remove it from that system so that I don't get locked out of my game, you know, at some point. And that's what happened. There's no mechanism for that. So that license should be able to be, you know, moved from a system.
What game?
Right?
You see, this is Crisis?
Crisis Warhead, yeah.
Yeah, Spore also has that same problem. A lot of people are complaining about the program.
And, of course, the reason they have these is because people pirate the games. But as we learned about Spore, people pirated that game more because of its DRM. You know,
just because
they could. I mean, so maybe more people are downloading this game, but are they really playing it? Or are they just putting it in their collection? I mean, I wonder. You know, is it being pirated just because it's a challenge? Well, Ubisoft seems to think that maybe adding DRM is the reason why these games are getting pirated so heavily. So Prince of Persia is not going to have any DRM.
Oh, so we'll see, you know, what happens with that one, how heavily it's pirated, how much, you know, people will just appreciate that the game will work without having to be cracked.
So,
although Sean,
a representative, a community manager from Ubiraz wrote in their official forum, says that you're right when you say that when people want to pirate the game, they will, but DRM is there to make it as difficult as possible for pirates to make copies of our games. A lot of people complain that DRM, copyright management, is what forces people to pirate games, but as Prince of Persia PC has no DRM, we will see how truthful people actually are. Not very, I imagine. It's almost like they're setting up a scenario where they know they're going to fail. People are going to pirate the game, and then they can say,
"We told you so."
Yeah,
exactly.
Well,
yeah.
But there is another aspect to this, because you were talking about the DRM getting in your way for what you were doing legitimately. We've had this before. We've played games all together, having a geek LAN party, and the game will require a DVD or a CD in the drive, and that's part of that's their copy protection to make sure the media is in there. And a lot of times, even though we've purchased the games, we'll download the crack just so we don't have to deal with having
the
CD.
No CD, DVD crack, right?
Yeah, another Ubisoft game, the what was the one, the time travel where you're a thief? Do you remember that game? It was one that came out recently. I'm drawing a blank on the name, but people have been complaining about that one, that it was actively pinging.
Is that Assassin's Creed?
Assassin's Creed.
Right.
The PC version of that was having a lot of problems with their digital rights management, where it was just actively, through the course of the game, pinging these verification servers to make sure that
it
was a legitimate
right.
copy, and it was impacting the performance of the game, and they'd actually have to unplug their
they had to shut off their internet.
Network. Yeah.
They talk about this in the story.
Yeah.
We're going to link to it. It's at Ars Technica. which if you don't read is it's a great site. They were bought by Wired this last year, so. But it's still the same guys. That's all I care about. And all those guys are from back east. Yeah. They all went to MIT, and they're really smart. So.
They make another interesting point in that article is that people that pirate games are typically not lost sales anyway. They're going to pirate for the sake of pirating, and they probably wouldn't buy the game.
Yeah. I think people download this stuff, but how many people actually play it? I wonder.
Yeah, how many people would – if they're playing five different games, how many people would pay equivalent of $250 for these games?
Yeah.
Like who has that disposable income?
And why does a game have to cost $50? That's a lot of money. Yeah.
There's a lot of resources that go into it, a lot of people involved.
I get that. So. But, you know, if they were to lower the price, do you think they could sell more units and make up their cost that way? Mm-hmm. I'd love to see somebody try that. I'm sure maybe somebody has and they found out it doesn't work. But
how much do you think the next Duke Nukem will cost?
Yeah. Then again, the money is in the subscription basis.
Yeah. You know what? I think they've kind of it's been the way they set the market up is when you see a $30 game, you automatically think it's old and you know it's price reduced. So even if it were a new cutting edge game for $30, people might not put as much value into it as they would if it were $50.
Is it the same price for if you download the game, you know, like with the stream technology?
Yeah.
It's the same price. Okay.
Oh, and this DRM on Prince of Persia, there's no DRM on the box copy of the game. The version on Steam, of course, will have DRM because Steam has their own
proprietary, yeah.
I love Steam. Stuff. It's great.
Yeah,
I've never
used it.
Yeah, I really do. I love it.
So I'm going to open up phones now. You're welcome to call in at area code 831-476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can call in with your questions and comments about technology and GeekSpeak. And also we'd love to hear if you have any experience with the Google Chrome browser, first-hand experience, to see what that experience was like for you. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Complete Mailing Service. Direct mailing is what they do. Complete Mailing Service at 425-5556. Today on All Things Considered, an unusual prescription for Parkinson's disease, dancing. Visit the studio of dance icon Mark Morris, where people with Parkinson's do amazing, even beautiful movement, discovering a new sense of freedom step by step today on All Things Considered from NPR News, starting at 5 p.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Imagine the Marx Brothers answering questions about cars. Picture Monty Python trying to imitate engine sounds. I could do that. Mix that up with a little Dr. Ruth and some Smothers Brothers, and you've got Car Talk. You can hear Click and Clack give their advice on cars every Saturday at 11 a.m., and that's after us, and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Thank you, Sean.
Yep.
GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS, in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. With us, we have Sean Cleveland and Ryder Brooks in the air room talking about geek news, and we are taking your calls. So, Ryder, do you have any other news stories?
Yeah, I thought I'd talk about it a little bit, since I work for Sun and we've got some cool stuff. Sun just released OpenSolaris 2008.11, which is their new open source-based operating system that's kind of the precursor to our next commercial release. Interesting technologies that are in there. One of them, we may have talked about ZFS in the past, which is a file system that Sun's developed.
A very good one.
Very good one. And it is now the default file system in OpenSolaris.
I didn't realize it wasn't before.
It may have been, but they actually, I think it was. But it's now more prominent. They've actually added a really nice feature into the GNOME desktop called TimeSlider. And it works similar to what you'd expect with, like, Time Machine on Apple, but it's integrated right into the root file system rather than doing symlinks and whatnot like Apple does.
Or rather hard links is how they implement Time Machine, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and it's built right in there. It's a very simple interface. You just open up a window. You give it kind of a snapshot interval, like how frequently you want it to record time slices, and built right into the GNOME file manager is a little slide bar, and it just shows you the date, and you slide back, and you can see right in your file manager time slices of your file system, and it's per file system basis, and it's really easy with CFS to just add lots and lots of file systems onto it. I actually saw a live demo that showed somebody creating 100 mirrored file systems in like 20 seconds.
Huh.
So wow. It was pretty impressive to watch. And,
wow.
And if you actually look, I mean, this is more geeky for people that are into Linux and command line interface, but the ZFS file tool set is for the file creation is really cool. You can do things in a fraction of the time that it would take you to do on traditional Linux or Unix file systems.
Very cool.
So,
personally, I've been looking into Nexenta, which is OpenSolaris kernel with a Ubuntu runtime or a user space environment.
Oh, that's cool.
But haven't had as much time as I'd like to play with that. Mm-hmm. But anyone who has experience with the new Solaris release, OpenSolaris release, mm-hmm. Or the like, is welcome to call in as well.
Yeah, and it's free to download. It's about 600-700 megabyte CD, so it's just like Ubuntu and other Linux distributions, except it's not Linux. Hmm. Check it out.
So we have a call from Pacific Grove. We have Lisa. Picture misaligned on monitor. Hello, is this Lisa?
Yes, hi. This is just an ordinary question. I'm not a geek. but the picture on my monitor in the last month, since I went on DSL actually, has moved to the right and down, maybe a couple inches from the top. And I've tried, adjusting it from the monitor and going in the computer and the control panel, but nothing really seems to help. And I'm wondering why this has happened and if there's a way to correct it.
Is this a CRT, a tube type monitor, or is it a flat screen?
LCD.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It looks like I don't have the ability for the geeks to be able to talk to you.
Is that better?
I know I can't hear. I can barely hear them. They sound like they're far away.
Okay. I'll try to work on that. With regard to the question that was asked, it was, is this a TV monitor or an LCD screen?
It's just, the monitor that comes with a computer.
Is it a flat screen?
It's not on the wall, but it's one of the small ones.
Really thin?
Is that a flat screen?
Yes.
Okay. Obviously, I'm not a geek.
Right. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to play relay here.
I guess we need to find out what operating system. Right.
So what I'm thinking is that it's not something to do with your software. So you wouldn't be able to solve it through going to control panel. They're like, it sounds like it's actually a setting you would have on the monitor. Okay. Many LCD screens would have a reset or a sync button on them. And
well, this has three little buttons across the bottom. It's just a plain button and a minus and a plus, and I've played with those.
Okay, so the plain button doesn't seem to do anything.
No.
That's odd. Usually that plain button would at least bring up a menu that you'd be able to fiddle with.
If it's an LCD monitor,
well, it does bring up
changing
a menu.
The resolution from one and back.
And then one of the options is positioning. And I did go to that, but it doesn't really correct the problem. It goes horizontal or vertical, and I've played with that, and I've got it at the extreme, but it won't totally correct the problem. It's about 2 inches of nothing on the left side, and then the whole thing is just low, so that I constantly, if I'm on the Internet, I'm having to use my horizontal arrows to read things.
Oh, I see. Oh, this is your video card. The resolution on your video card set larger than your monitor.
I have this question, don't I?
Lisa, if you could hold on for just one moment. We actually have the geeks are not, you're not able to hear when the geeks are speaking. So,
no, I can't.
Right, so hold on just 1 second. One of the geeks is actually answering your question here.
Oh, okay. Should I turn the radio up?
No. Actually, just hold on. I'll be able to relay that message back to you.
Yeah, Lowell has left us. He's in Cancun, and we just don't have his expertise on the board. Can you hear me now?
No, just Sean. Just answer the...
All right. So I think what's happening is your screen resolution is larger than your monitor, which is why you're having to use your scroll bars to scroll down to see things. So what's happening, what you need to do is this a Windows or Mac? I didn't get that.
It sounds like it's a Windows machine.
Yeah. All right. So if you right-click on the desktop and go to Properties, you want to open up Display Properties.
But, Sean, she can't hear you, so
yeah.
This has to
well,
go
Well, she
through.
Can hear me on the radio. I guess not, yeah. What
so,
do you want, Miles?
So what I think you should do, Lisa, is actually email the geeks. So going to our website and clicking on Contact Us, and we should be able to figure something out.
Okay, and your website is what?
Geekspeak.org.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Take care. Okay, so now I'm wondering, how do we deal with phone calls when we can't
There's nobody here at the station, so I don't know what to say.
Yeah. So I'm wondering...
One of those buttons is...
they can hear you on your mic, right?
Yes, they okay. can hear me. So I'm wondering if it's one of these dials over here, but not wanting to...
Well, why don't you take line 3, because that's Rich from SoCal, and I think he can talk about... He's got some things to talk about Chrome. Be good to hear about that.
Sure. Okay, so... Rich, you on the line?
Hi, yeah, I've been using Chrome for, it seems like a couple months at least at work, and I've come to really like it. This is the browser I use the most.
Okay.
Has he used the non-beta? Can you hear me?
No, he can't hear you.
Ask him if he's used the non-beta version.
No, I can't hear you. Let's see, one thing I've noticed in it is it doesn't support as much as established browsers. They can't use Microsoft SharePoint. It doesn't interact with that correctly and doesn't interact with Microsoft Update, but that's typical. And there's certain times, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I went through trying to download something from Google, and it told me I had to use Internet Explorer or Firefox instead of Chrome. So I think it's not, it's a classic Google beta.
Okay.
But it's really clean.
Actually, I think I might have discovered the issue.
Yeah?
Sean, speak for a moment.
Hello?
Hi.
Great.
Wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Tech support.
So I wanted to say is with Chrome is you're going to have the same problem that you have with a lot of the other browsers like Firefox or Safari. Some websites are just geared towards Internet Explorer, and you have to use ActiveX controls or Microsoft proprietary things that are only friendly on Internet Explorer. So no surprise that you're going to still hit those limitations. I'd heard just in the press release on the final release of Chrome is that they've greatly enhanced the audio and video compatibility with Flash and things like that. So that's interesting too.
Yeah, I haven't seen any problems with Flash stuff.
Right. Have you pulled down the final release? Or are you still?
No, I haven't. I guess I will tomorrow.
Great.
Yeah,
I need to install that. I'm really curious about the bookmarks.
The bookmarks are horrific in the original one. I mean, it's just completely perplexing. You press, there's a star icon. You press that, and it looks like you've already put a bookmark in some strange place, and then there's an edit key. I hope they've cleaned that up.
Yeah, there's no interface for editing your bookmarks, moving them around, filing them in folders. It's just not mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
It's too bad. And you were mentioning Foxmarks, Sean, before. Prior to Foxmarks, I was using Google's sync technology for Firefox 2, and then when Firefox 3 came out, they axed it. They said they weren't going to support it, so I was really let down. I had this really cool bookmark syncing for all my computers, and then I started looking for another one.
Foxmarks is cool, but they update their software almost every day.
Yeah.
So I need to, every time I open up, Firefox, it tells me I need an update.
Yeah. Well, they did recently add syncing password information, which is good for some and bad for others. Some people don't like to have that
right.
on a centralized server, but that was an integral thing that I used all the time with Google, so that was a very nifty add-on for me.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call and the sure. conversation about Chrome.
Thanks. Bye.
Did you guys hear about the energy-generating floors that are powering Tokyo subways?
Energy-generating floors.
People's step.
Yeah, stepping. So they're actually using the kinetic energy of people walking in the subway. So they installed piezoelectric energy-generating floors. And they're capturing this energy to power their turnstiles and the screens on the walls.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah, aren't they innovative?
That was really cool. Yeah.
Have you seen the YouTube videos of people in Japan, like, getting into the train stations? They'd have, like, people, like security people or police officers outside, like, pushing people in and cramming them like sardines.
No kidding.
It was the most bizarre video I'd ever seen.
So the total amount of floor space will add up to around 25 square meters, and they expect to obtain over 1,400 kilowatts a day, more than enough to power their systems.
Wow.
Huh.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. Well, we'll take another call here. Oops, there we go. Unfortunately, I don't have my line listings here. Who is this? Hello, you're on GeekSpeak.
Kirkland.
Hi.
Oh, so now I have you? Okay, because I could hear your voice before. I didn't know what. Okay. Yeah, I've got a problem. I've got an iMac, and I want to burn DVDs, and I've been doing that on Coast Titanium. But the problem is I can't change the aspect ratio. If I try to change the aspect ratio to widescreen, then it says, you know, you need another 4 gigabytes on the disk, which I don't know why it's doing that. The other thing is when I said, okay, look, I'll try iDVD, and iDVD, for some reason, just keeps failing for some reason. So between the other thing is, I don't know if about Toast Titanium, but I tend to get a lot of glitches and errors in that, whereas they're not even, when I play the movie on my computer, they're fine.
Hmm. What version of Toast do you have?
7, I think it was 7 point something. I got the newest version.
Mm-hmm. I believe their newest one on Mac is version 9, actually.
I've forgotten the number, but I'm not
impressed. Yeah. Okay, so that's the newest one. Okay. Yeah, I definitely recommend, you know, for the glitches on Toast, recommend making sure you have the latest updates from them. From the aspect ratio problem you're talking about, it sounds like it's...
Yeah, I'm by no means an iDVD expert, but there are different themes that you can have with iDVD to choose whether it's a widescreen or a standard format output.
That's a I'm having the aspect ratio problem with Toast. And iDVD just
doesn't work at all. Okay.
Yeah, it'll say an error or something like that, or failed, or.
And this is video data that's the aspect ratio that it's natively at. You're not trying to convert it. It's just a matter of plugging it in and burning it at that correct aspect ratio.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, the thing is that when there are a number of movies, and every time I put them on the DVD, these are ones that I've downloaded. What happened is that it's in widescreen, except what it plays it as is regular square or whatever that version is. And then so everything's cut off on the sides.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, unfortunately, you've called us on the days where we don't have any of the media geeks, Lyle or Ben or Dee Dee, with us. Yeah. So,
you might want to post to our forum, forum.geekspeak.net.
Forum.geekspeak.org.
.org. I'm sorry. Jeez.
Look for forums on Toast, and I haven't been able to find anything that fit yet.
Yeah. But if you want to post there, you know, we do have some people that look, and we can kind of get some community involvement, and people might have some suggestions for you on what's going on there.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Thanks.
All right. And next up, we have, let's see here, have Doug from Santa Cruz. Hello, Doug.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I have a PC here at home. It's a 2003 Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm using the computer, I like to stream various different programs, and sometimes that includes like either baseball or football or basketball that may be in another state.
Okay.
Say, like, Virginia is playing Virginia Tech, and I want to check it out because it's an exciting game.
So you're getting streaming radio over the internet for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it'll pop up an embedded player.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever done this.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
So it's not video. This is just as radio. Audio.
Say, like, KNBR. You go to their webpage, and then you click on, you know, Listen Live. They'll have something like Listen Live to 680, and a little pop-up will come up, and you get a little embedded player.
KUSP does the same thing with KUSP here does the same thing.
Yes.
So what is the problem you're running into?
Some of the ones that I've been trying to obtain have not been coming on. They're not the embedded player is not popping up, or the player will pop up, but nothing will come through.
Now, what browser are you using?
What browser do I use?
Do you click on the big blue E to start up your web browser?
Is it Internet Explorer?
You mean Internet Explorer?
Yeah,
I use Internet Explorer.
Because believe it or not, Internet Explorer seems to play a lot of the streaming content better than some of the other browsers. Sometimes I have to go to IE to
use. Again, that's just the format. I never used
to have this problem. It was just recently. So I did a desk cleanup just to see whether I had, you know, not enough space or something, and I have plenty of space.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a spacing. It seems more like a codec issue.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming when you're playing in Internet Explorer, you said another program would pop up. Is that Windows Media Player that's popping up?
Windows Media Player works, yes.
Okay. So are you hearing anything at all, and it just sounds bad?
No, I hear nothing.
It just doesn't come up at all.
Yeah.
It tells me it's more of a browser blank,
or else the player does not even pop up.
Right. I don't think it's something running in the background.
Yeah, it's a
codec
issue.
Or your computer. I think it's to do with the browser.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Your phone battery's going out.
I'm wondering if maybe you should... Are you using the latest version of Internet Explorer, or are you using Internet Explorer 7? The latest version's 8.
Oh, no. I have 9 or better, maybe 11 even.
Okay, good. Are we up to that now?
Are we talking about the media player?
The media player 11. Yeah. That's the media player, though. What I'm wondering is you're using a web browser to access the content, so you need to make sure the web browser is up to date.
Well, the thing is that it works with some stations, but it doesn't work with others.
Right, because different stations are going to be using different codecs for their audio streaming. Yeah.
So is my Internet Explorer updated?
Well, the latest is version 7. It's not beta.
Whoa. And unfortunately, it appears that we have a whole bunch of interference.
You know, there are actually codec packs that you can get on the internet that you can actually download and get like a very robust set of video and audio codecs.
I'm thinking maybe you should go to Windows Update and grab the latest beta of Internet Explorer 8. I've been using it. It seems to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely run into cases where a media player thinks it can play something. It's allocated for that extension type, but the codec is just not compatible.
Or maybe just move away from Internet Explorer altogether and install Firefox or even Google Chrome.
It seems to me very much like it's a media codec thing. I don't know that an alternate browser would help them all that much. Well, but at the same time, you know, we're not shooting too well on this particular show.
Yeah, each of those sites that use a third-party codec or player, they should have information on where to grab the software that's necessary to play that back. So maybe a little research into the site that's streaming the video, see what they say.
The audio,
audio.
Yeah. I mean, Media Player, if it's an official codec that they support, they're supposed to be able to download it.
Yeah.
But I've frequently seen that it will silently fail, and you really have to dig into like more info within the Media Player to see why it's actually not working.
Yeah, Doug, send us, you know what, go to geekspeak.org, send us an email and links to some of these audio streams that you're using. That would help us to help you.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so next up, line 5, Barry from Capitola.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'm calling because I'm having trouble with uploading to my iPod, and I'm using a backup hard drive to store my music, but it just seems to get all jumbled when I'm... It seems like the only way to get all my music onto my iPod, which fits, is to have it on iTunes and upload it that way, and it won't fit, so I'm kind of in this conundrum here.
Yeah, I've got a small Nano that just drives me crazy. Because
is there a way to just take it straight off the external, and it didn't seem to be able to do that?
You can. It's fairly painful. I actually went down that road having all of my music on an external drive and then syncing over. And the drawback to that is iTunes does not like you to sometimes have an external drive and sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you always had the external drive connected, it's not a problem. But if you're constantly connecting and disconnecting, when you open it up again and the drive isn't connected, it means you have none of your music available, even in standard iTunes.
Are we talking about when you say you're running out of spaces because iTunes is copying it into its library and you're running out of space having the duplication? Is that the problem?
No, I just my computers just can't handle that much music on it. So
right, it's the same thing I had, which is my laptop hard drive was getting filled up, and I wanted to have more space for other things, so moved to an external drive.
Okay. Right.
Are you on a PC or a Mac?
A Mac.
I believe iTunes has a feature where you can import stuff into its library and tell it to not copy it, and it just stays on the hard drive.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
It's just a question of whether or not you want to have your music only available when the external drive is there. Is that the case, Barry?
I would be okay having it all on the external drive if that's the answer. It's just that I can't fit it all on my computer. So,
right.
I mean, you can have multiple iTunes libraries, and it will basically... If your external drive is not powered on, it will complain and say, do you want me to look for it or create a new iTunes library? And so you can have multiple libraries, and you just have to, when you boot it up, you have to, you know, there's like an op. An
well, it not multiple libraries per se. You can add in from different places, but there's a standard place to look for it.
Standard place, which it'll look for by default. But if you hold down the option key or the command key when you start it, it will prompt you for where you want to look for your library. So that may be a little help, but unfortunately with iPods, your best interface for getting data into it is iTunes, and you know, it's kind of engineered that way.
Yeah, so it looks like that your best bet would be then you have your external drive, you tell iTunes to go to a new directory on that external drive, and it will ask you if you want to migrate the songs over to that new library, and you will say yes, and it will take quite a while. It'll be like basically start it up and then go eat dinner.
Okay.
And these are in the advanced menu of the iTunes. If you go to iTunes Preferences Advanced, it discusses where the iTunes music folder location is. You could change that, and there's a checkbox in the latest version where you can turn on and off whether it copies it to your primary library or leaves it where it's being imported from.
Right, and you'll want to copy it.
Yeah. No, you will not want to copy.
No, he will if he wants to go to an external drive.
Oh, I thought he said it was on his external drive right now.
Oh, is it already on your external drive?
It's on my external drive, yeah.
And you don't want it on your hard drive on your computer?
No, yeah. I mean, can I have both the best of both worlds? Can I keep some music on my iTunes on my hard drive on my computer and the bulk of it on my...
If you find a way to do that, I personally would love to know.
Okay, so it's got to be one or the other.
Yeah, I would actually go to the Apple site and do a bit of a search on importing music. They've got separate sections for PCs and Macs. I've visited that in the past because I've had a similar type problem where
why have they made this
I have
so,
libraries all over the place.
So complicated.
On the contrary, if you just have a single hard drive, if you're just having it on a single computer, it's extremely simple. It's
right.
When you want to do something more complex that things get
I rip my own CDs and I keep them on my network, and you know I can import them into iTunes. But it seems like managing between what's on my iPod and what's in iTunes, it's just not straightforward. I just want to copy this stuff straight to the device and use it, you know. And then iTunes had its own rules and trying to figure out how to manage files. It's not straightforward.
For years, I had everything file-based, and I didn't use MP3 tags. Everything was in the file names. And when I wanted to use any sort of MP3 player, they're all MP3, you know, tag-based. And so it was a very long, arduous
task.
And
then it'll go back and reorder all your songs.
Yeah.
Put them in a flat structure.
Yeah, yeah.
Except through iTunes, where it's not.
Sorry we couldn't be more help, Barry. But this is the state of affairs as we see it right now.
I'll start searching around the Apple site, and I'll try playing around with what you did tell me here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call.
You know, I pulled out my old 40-gig iRiver. And charged it up, and God, you know, I really like using it. So easy. Oh, and Rockbox. So there's this, if you go to rockbox.com or org.
That's the Linux firmware?
It's a Linux firmware. Yeah. I put that on it, and it's like a whole new toy.
You can do that with iPods, too. Yeah,
I really like their open source firmware. It's really nice.
Okay, so next up, I think we have Gene from Pacific Grove. Hello, Gene.
Hello there. Let me ask you two questions instead of one. One quick question. That guy was talking about running out of memory.
Mm-hmm.
How do I find out how much memory I got on my Mac? I have the latest Mac.
Oh, when you're talking about memory, in this case, you're talking about hard drive space.
Right.
So, writer?
On the Mac, you basically go to the Finder or to your hard drive icon on your desktop and highlight it and do Command-I or go up to the File menu for info. And it will. One of the statistics that it'll give you is the available drive space.
Okay. My other question is, you were talking about getting streaming video coming in. I get things from people, and I can't open them, and I think it's because they're sending me something via Internet Explorer, and like it says, the thing is .wm or .dv.
Yeah, WMV.
Yeah.
That's a Windows Media Player file.
Okay, so I've got my Mac, and I've got what I've got, and it won't open that. I'll get a core dump.
So what you need is, I've forgotten what the name of it is.
VLC, Video LAN Player.
Yeah, there's a Video LAN Player, but there's also a codec package you could download.
Yeah, Persian, I think.
Parian. Perian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I download that into my Mac, and then my Mac will say, okay, I can open that stuff for you.
Yeah, it'll add additional codecs that you can play through the QuickTime player or through iTunes.
Right. Windows Media Video, I'm wondering if that one will be there if you need another one. There's you can look for Windows Media Player for Mac, and it'll send you to this other site with another program.
There's also Flip for Mac.
That's what I was looking at, Flip for Mac.
Are those things free?
Yeah.
Yes, they are. They are both free, and I use them myself, and they work wonderfully.
Now, we'll put links up to these.
Yeah, Flip for Mac is Flip, and the number 4, and then Mac.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Take care.
Bye. You too.
Well, we're actually able to answer a call without a problem.
I like the Video LAN player personally, although the newest, it's like a .96 release that they came out for Mac, just does not work well for streaming over the network. Like I have a bunch of movies that I've burned from DVD onto my NAS, and they just don't stream well on the newest version. I had to go actually to a point release older.
Something else, too, if you ever play a video and you just hear the audio, you don't see the video at all. Could be that it's coded in DivX, so you need to go to DivX, D-I-V-X.
No, actually, Parian has.
Does it have that? DivX. But on a PC, you need to go download the DivX codec, and then once you install that, you're good.
All right, it looks like we're running out of time. Sorry we weren't able to get to David from Monterey or Will from Carmel. Please call back next week. I'm sure we'll be able to take your call. On the next 7th Avenue project, How Music Shaped Human Nature. Dan Levitin, record producer, neuroscientist, and author of This Is Your Brain on Music, discusses his latest book, The World in 6 Songs, with KOSP's Robert Pauly. Levitin says music isn't just a product of evolution, but a driving force in our evolution on the 7th Avenue Project, Sunday at noon on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. Thank you, Sean and Ryder.